You're listening to Film Study with Ken McCusick. Each week, Ken McCusick from Russell Street Report breaks down the Baltimore Ravens game like no one else can. Head on over to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and make sure that you subscribe to Film Study with Ken McCusick. All right, you're listening to episode one of Film Study with Ken McCusick. If you listened last year, it was went under a different name. We went under Locked On Ravens. This year, we're a little separated from them, but it's going to be the same idea. Twice a week during the regular season, where Ken will break down the offensive and defensive line with us, and we'll get a good 30, 40 minutes, no commercials, just straight Raven talk, real detailed talk to get you through and make you a little more knowledgeable at the water cooler the next day. So just like last week, joining me is Ken McCusick from Russell Street Report.
Hey, Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Ken, I think it's important that we start off with a little intro and tell people that they can go and read your write-ins each week at Russell Street Report.
Yes, they're on Russell Street Report. If you search for Film Study Ravens in Google, you can find them. I'm also on Twitter, at Film Study Ravens, and love the conversation there. I usually react quickly to any questions about the articles there as well. So love to hear from you.
And I am Josh Soroka from Section 336, a Baltimore sports podcast. And you can follow me also on Twitter, at Josh Soroka, where you'll find right now a lot of emotional reactions to Oriole games, as it's being interesting this week.
How exciting was that last night?
That's one of the top games in the past few years, and let's just hope that they can build on that.
Now, do you remember in 1989, this is going a long way back, but a lot of Oriole fans remember this, the Mike Devereaux home run off the foul pole game, also yes. Against the Angels, also down two, entering the bottom of the ninth inning at home. They had that crazy Donnie Moore throw to third base, which got the runners into scoring position initially and set up the game, a two-run single by Larry Sheets to get it tied up, and then Devereaux's home run. But last night reminded me a lot of that.
Yeah, and this season reflects a lot like the 89 Orioles. It's really not a team that you expect to be in it, and somehow they're still kind of hanging on in there. So if they can get hot at the end, they can make something happen.
Right. I mean, Josh, you didn't live through it, but the 1974 Orioles were 63-65 on August 28th and went 28-6 the rest of the way and won the division. So it has happened before in O's history.
Of course, that's like most things in Orioles history, it happened before I was born.
Most good things.
Yeah, but what I have seen in my lifetime is some Raven victories and some Raven Super Bowls. Even got to witness one in person a few years ago. So I'm excited. I was excited in maybe December, January, looking forward to this upcoming Ravens season. But since then, we've had so many injuries and weird things happen that I'm a little concerned going into this season.
It's just been a series of gut punches here every day in camp. You know, you see something positive on the field, oftentimes from the defense, and there's some gut punch afterwards with one or two new injuries reported, whether they're season long in a lot of these cases or just for a few days. But every one brings up questions.
It does, and the number one question right now for everyone, we're going to break down this offensive line in a minute and go real granular with that. But the broad question that's on everyone's mind is Joe Flacco going to be able to play week one?
Right. We can certainly address that. I mean, what I always say is if Joe Flacco is lost for the years, the Ravens are in an awful lot of trouble because there is no backup that makes any sense. Ryan Mallett has had a very frustrating camp preseason and, frankly, the last year or two with the Ravens in terms of his ability to throw accurately. And I don't see him recovering. I think if the Ravens do find out that Flacco can't go, they will try and look outside the organization. But I don't know that they really ought to borrow from the future to get Colin Kaepernick the way they could. So with the quality of this team right now overall, even with what we've seen in terms of the defense in the preseason, I still question the wisdom of borrowing from future cap space to sign Kaepernick.
Well, see, what you're using there is you're using some facts and knowledge of the game rather than just social media. Because according to social media, Josh Woodron, the Liberty grad, is the greatest quarterback since Peyton Manning. And the Ravens are racist for not signing Kaepernick. So clearly, there's more to the story than what Facebook and Twitter are telling you.
Yeah. Well, when is that ever true? I mean, it's just so unlike that to be the Facebook and Twitter can't give you the full story.
Right.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, Josh Woodrum has a lot of yardage in last week in particular after the catch, but there's a lot to like about what he's done as well. I mean, he's managed the offense fairly well. He hasn't made any mistakes. He's run the ball effectively personally, particularly that bootleg I loved. But you know, he had a 40-yard catch that was minus one plus 41 yak from Williams, was a lot of his yardage this last week. You could make the argument that Mallett's scramble around about a three-foot area in the pocket to find Donnell in the left side of the end zone was a better passing play than what Woodrum had on the left side. So I appreciate what Woodrum has done. I hope he gets a chance somewhere. But I don't think the Ravens will go with him unless, you know, multiple injuries were to occur.
Gotcha. So if they're going with Woodrum, they're kind of just figuring we're not going to really go anywhere this season.
Right.
All right. Well, let's get into details. We're recording this after the second preseason game. They played well against the Redskins. Then they just kind of dominated the Dolphins. It's preseason football. These games don't mean anything. But the offensive line looked pretty good. What? Why is the offensive line look well in preseason despite so many injuries?
All right. Well, I think basically I'd say that I don't know that the offensive line put together a great game, but you make a point that they didn't have sacks allowed, so that's a positive step at least. Right now, I mean, this is upsetting the entire Twitterverse and all Ravens message boards. But Ryan Jensen and James Hurst are the Ravens' best two healthy linemen.
That doesn't How make scary any is sense. That makes no sense.
It makes no sense. You know, let's go around the horn here and really talk about where the Ravens offensive line is, because a lot of people don't watch preseason football, and so just to update it,
right?
Yanda, of course, has not played in the first two games. He is back at practice, and he has participated in some 11-on-11 drills, but I think they're targeting the first game, and frankly, I completely understand the need to bubble wrap Yanda until that first game, because he is the offensive line in a lot of ways. He's definitely the best player. He can still help you in practice by hopefully mentoring some young players, but I don't think there's a lot of muscle memory that Yanda needs to build up, or what he does he can do very quickly at the end of camp. So anyway, he hasn't been around yet. Austin Howard, the new signee, signed for 3 years, $16 million. That was a borrowing from Future Cap to do that.
Okay.
They had to restructure contracts to get the money to do it. He's come in and played right tackle. He did not look that good in the first game. He got beaten for a pressure outside. He had a holding penalty, and he also – a holding penalty was in level two where it really shouldn't have occurred. I mean, it was a completely unnecessary 5 yards away from the play, and as soon as he did it, he knew he'd done something silly and threw his hands up, but it was bad. He did recover a fumble, but as I look him play, I mean, he looks ponderously slow to me, and – you know, looking at the offensive line and who they have right now, I wouldn't be shocked if they moved Austin Howard to left guard and Hurst back out to right tackle when Stanley is healthy.
Now, Austin Howard, that was a late addition based on injury, right?
I'm sorry, I missed some of that.
That was signing Austin Howard was a late reaction based on injuries. Is that correct?
Yes, a combination of three interior injuries that occurred, but they didn't have a right tackle that whole time since they let Rick Wagner go at the end of last year.
Okay, so they needed someone anyway.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the rest of the line here. Jermaine Illuminor, who is called London by a lot of the players because he's from the UK originally, was playing at right guard the previous week. And he played guard the previous week, I should say. And you would have thought that he would have started this game, but he missed some practice. And apparently they wanted to hold him out for some reason. And they started Gerard Pusley. Now, Pusley is a third string guy, honestly speaking. He might play with the twos in some weeks, but most of the time, I'd say if the Ravens have 15 guys in camp, he's one of the last five. They put him in at right guard facing Ndamukong Suh, and it was absolutely as pretty as you would expect, given that was the case. He got bullied by Sue quite a bit, and I couldn't expect any more from him. I mean, he He did his best under a very difficult circumstance, but he's obviously not to be the answer for the Ravens at right guard. Illuminor did enter with some sort of a device similar to what we've seen from Ray Lewis at the end of the 2012 playoffs on his right arm, and I'm wondering how much that might have factored in. But Illuminor did get 31 snaps in this game at right guard at the end. We'll talk about him in a little bit, but did you have any notes on that you wanted to make or any questions?
No, it's the same as I see him come out there with the thing on his arm, and then I'm more concerned of, great, another injury. So I think the theme of this Ravens season is going, at least the preseason, is going to be injuries, and I hope that they have the depth in this team to recover from that and build something else rather than going into each week and the announcers start off with, here's all the guys who the Ravens had injured in the preseason.
Right. Yeah, no, I'd prefer if the topic switched to something else as well, of course. So let's keep moving along a little bit along the line here. Ryan Jensen has played a lot of different positions for the Ravens over the last few years. He's played some tackle in the preseason. He's played a lot of guard. And this year, he's finally getting a chance to be the first team center after the team released Jeremy Zuda. Actually, they didn't release him. They traded him to the 49ers. And his he's looked very good there. I've been very impressed. He's a lot leaner and heavier than he was before. So, he's picking up a lot of muscle mass and reducing his body fat content to do that. And he looks very physical at the point of attack. And it's been especially good when you consider he's been playing next to two guards who are really not starting NFL caliber. So he's had Illuminor and Skura on one side, and he's had Pusley for a game here as well. And he's played well despite that, including some up-the-middle pass protection that's been fairly impressive in the game. So I've been happy with his play. I don't think all questions are answered for him yet, especially how can he lead a line? Can he get the calls right and do those things? But I do think he's definitely earned the chance here, and I'd hate to think that they brought Zuda back, as they did yesterday, and he's now going to take Jensen's spot and move him over to guard, because they have a chance for a really good lineman at center with Jensen. And Zuda was a guy that we talked about many times last year, Josh, was just getting bullied at the end of the year in terms of getting pushed back into the pocket and creating all kinds of problems.
Yeah, Zuda was a guy who was very frustrating last year, who we did not expect to see on this team this year. And to see the Ravens go out and get Zuda, again, I think speaks to those injury concerns. Also a guy that I guess they knows the offensive line can call the line. I wondered when I saw that sign-in if they're concerned about Flacco missing all the preseason, Flacco not building a practice regiment with Jensen, if something like that is why they're bringing Zuda back. But it's an interesting move nonetheless to bring a guy back who we complained so much about last year and kind of were happy to see him gone.
Yeah, it is a very interesting move in that sense. I mean, one of the problems that I have specifically with Zuda, and I said this a couple times last year, is that the AFC North has a ton of large interior defensive linemen. Now, all divisions probably do, but some of the really great ones are in the AFC North. Atkins, Hargrave, and Shelton at Cleveland are really big guys. And you can't afford to have a center who's undersized and is going to give up ground in the pocket.
Well, let's hope that if Zuda's the plan, that he worked really hard this offseason to not embarrass himself again.
Yeah.
So, I was just going to move on to, with all these guys, how do you think they set up for the regular starting line?
Okay, that's good. So, I first of all, we don't know what the status of Stanley is. The Ravens have been very closely guarded with injuries, as always, this camp. By the way, I don't have a problem with that. That's what they ought to do. But we don't know what the status of Stanley is. We don't know when he'll be back. When I hear language like, it's not the sort of thing that's season ending, that concerns the hell out of me in terms of he's going to miss several weeks of the season. And it bothers me. But anyway, Stanley hopefully will be back at left tackle before long. At left guard, the guy I'd like to see is Austin Howard, since he looked very slow, and I think it would make more sense to move him to the inside. I'd like to keep Jensen at center, which means Zuda is a backup in this system. Yanda should be ready for the opener. He'll be the right guard, barring hopefully very unforeseen circumstances. And then at right tackle, I think that James Hurst has played well enough in this preseason to have a chance there. He's been a pretty good run blocker. I've been impressed with how he's sealed blocks on the edge. So that's been positive. He did allow a sack against the Redskins, did not allow any significant pressure in the second game against the Dolphins. So I'm happy with how Hurst is playing right now, and I think he's earned the chance to play at right tackle.
All right. Well, that's good. I mean, again, like you said, Stanley, let's mark that as more injury concerns, as this is the storyline for the Ravens this year. And Howard, I guess your thought is that as even though he was poor, performance moving him to this line is more his what's more fit to his style of play? Or is that just a hope?
It's probably just a hope. Okay. But, a lot of times hope is the only strategy you have, unfortunately.
All right. So you're putting Zuda in as a backup. I think wait and see with that, because it's one of those, sometimes they just like guys because they like them off the field and give them more chances and opportunities, because of history. But all right, if Zuda's the backup, what other guys do we have on the team as, non-starters?
Well, as non-starters, Matt Skura plays the exact same positional mix as Zuda, and that's why the reacquisition of Zuda isn't the kind of player that I'd want. I'd want a large guard before I'd want a guard center swing, or I'd take a guard tackle swing also. But another center guard is exactly what you've got with Matt Skura. Skura played very well against the Redskins, less well against the Dolphins, but you know, a second-year guy, which means they have two more years of control over – actually, I believe he might still be a first-year guy, but because you have to actually not be on the practice squad for the whole year. So I believe he may still be a first-year guy, which means they have 4 years of team control with him. And that has real value as an option. You want to consider that very closely in terms of where you are. One of the problems with the Ravens is that even if they get good performances out of their quote-unquote two best linemen right now, Jensen and Hurst, they're both fourth-year players, and they have to pay market value for those players next year. So the situation wouldn't be rosy even if they played great football this year.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that kind of covers the offensive line. Let's move on to the defense, and let's start with the front five.
All right. Well, sounds good. I mean, the one thing about this Ravens preseason is it is fun to watch to the very end, because the Ravens have talented players very deep on the roster at all front five defensive positions. So both outside linebackers and the three down linemen. So, you know, just talking about it, there are eight defensive linemen. No one, they have injury concerns all over the field at other positions. And you know, when I go to camp, I have a bunch of minuses next to players who are out, and they're all over the roster except on the defensive line, where nobody can feel like they can miss a day because the competition is so stiff. It got more complicated against the Redskins, exactly how that's going to play out. The Ravens have eight guys they're giving snaps to defensively on the line, and that's Ricard, Davis. Let me see if I can get them all without messing up. Ricard, Davis, Henry, Urban, Kafusi, Williams, Pierce, and I knew I was going to mess one up. It'll come to me. Anyway, Ricard is also getting some snaps at fullback and tight end, which is tremendously more complicated thing. He would have been the guy I thought that would have been cut, or the Ravens would have tried to keep on the practice squad. That wouldn't have worked, by the way. The Ravens practice squad is the first place that other NFL GMs look when they are short a defensive lineman. So Ricard would have been one of the first guys snapped up. But now it's very interesting with him playing fullback and tight end, making some great blocks. You know, do they keep him? And if they keep him, they've really got to make space for him to be active each week, because it doesn't help to have a guy who's a defensive line candidate who might not ever be good enough to play there, at least not beat out your first seven, and a fullback who's just a backup on your roster. You really need to make sure he's active and can do both things on a week-to-week basis and play some special teams for you. But it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But the Ravens may decide no real fullback, keep Ricard, so they keep him on the roster, and then they use him in that capacity.
Yeah, and I mean, if there's anything, it's the defense. And the Ravens showed a really good defense last year. They're building on it this year. And like you said, with that depth, is going to make it really hard to keep all these people, because the Ravens are known for defensive guys.
Yeah, I mean, very, very true on the defensive line. I mean, first of all, Josh, last year, we talked about this a little bit. The Ravens got through the entire season with only five defensive linemen sharing every single snap last year. And what made that interesting is that P's defense relies less on defensive linemen than most other NFL schemes. They played an average of only 2.17 defensive linemen per snap. And it's normally the number would be about 2.5 for a 3-4 defense. And I'll explain that a little bit, is that normally in a 3-4 defense, you shift from three down linemen to two down linemen when you're rushing the passer in an obvious passing situation. But with Pease, they played a lot of 1-5-5, a one down lineman, usually Jernigan, sometimes Guy, along with five linebackers and five defensive backs. So Pease defense relied less on defensive linemen. They got through the whole year. Brent Urban, who played very well last year, people maybe didn't realize it, just did limited snaps. Now he is lighting it up this preseason, is you know, the bottom of the defensive line rotation for the Ravens last year. But they are much deeper this year. They drafted Chris Wormley. You know, they've got a young player like Kafusi returning in year two. They've got size. I mean, they intimidate quarterbacks on the inside. Pierce has looked like a complete monster on the inside in terms of being able to push linemen back and do the things that I ascribe to other AFC North interior big men.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, I guess we can trust the defense. With this depth, can any of those guys transition to the offensive line, or are they just built differently?
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing, because that's really what they're doing with Ricard. I don't think there's a player who ought to be, you know, truly changed into an offensive lineman. I don't think that would make a lot of sense. But in terms of getting defensive players to help in certain offensive situations, it's very reasonable. And for years, the Ravens had Haloti Ngata come in on goal line situations. And for a 3-year period, they just had marvelous success running the exact same play time after time. It's a little mini stretch play to Willis McGahee. He would find the hole, usually behind Ngata, but they would almost always run it to his side when he was in. And they scored a lot of touchdowns that way. And I'd love to see them return to that kind of cleverness of scheme, where they're willing to use some of that tremendous size and athleticism they have on the defensive line on the offensive side of the ball.
Well, what about a baseball move? You don't see it much in football, but what about trading one of these defensive guys for an offensive guy and just a complete conversion?
Yeah, very, very reasonable. And you don't even have to have a one-for-one trading partner. And this has been pointed out, but oftentimes, it's very common at the end of camp that you find one other team that has a surplus of talent where you want it, and you have a surplus guy that you're about to cut, and you say, okay, let me trade these two guys for each other. And when they're really margin of the roster guys, usually it's a seventh-round draft pick you get in exchange, so if you're not getting a player. So they traded Easton, a center, a few years ago to the 49ers. Might have been 2 years, might have been three now at this point. But they traded him and got a seventh-round draft pick, for example. Jerome Sapp, they reacquired to play the dime for a seventh-round draft pick more than a few years before that, in 2006. So, you know, there's a history of doing that. There's a history of exchanging those players. The Ravens actually can make a bigger move, because if they really wanted to acquire a young lineman who has hope to be good, you know, you could trade Brent Urban. They have enough depth to maybe cover for him. Urban is a one-year rental, so he doesn't have tremendous value. He's in his fourth year, and he'll be a free agent. But he does have a fair amount of value based on what he's done this preseason, what he's done in previous years. His size and just, you know, athleticism appears extremely good. I think he'll be a very good player this year for somebody. And it would be great if the Ravens could get value for him if they trade him. Carl Davis would be another guy who they could trade. And has some value. He's a third-year player, so in some ways he might have more value than Urban. But anyway, the Ravens would have a chance to get a young lineman who probably is not starting now for a team, but would have been the sixth lineman for another team.
Okay, that's there's a few more weeks of preseason. Let's see. Hopefully they can work something out there, and help out, use the treasures on the defense to help out the offense. Yeah. So Let's expand the defense a little bit, and let's look at the linebackers. I ask you a lot about – I'm always intrigued by what jerseys people flock to. And I feel like this year the jerseys people are going to be buying is the Bowser jersey, because it's a cool name on a jersey.
Well, cool name on a jersey, great player on the field. I mean, we're very excited. He had a great game against the Skins. Didn't do anything specific to advance his cause, but boy, the snap competition is so tight. And I'll tell you what it starts with is the Ravens only played 51 defensive snaps against the Dolphins. So right there, you have a restricted number of snaps because the defense is playing so well. Bowser ended up playing 14 snaps in the second game. And I mean, that's who's on at the end of the game for the Ravens. I mean, that's the type of outside linebacker the Ravens have on at the end of the game. They're five deep at outside linebacker. They have Bowser, Za'Darius Smith, who is a kind of a whipping boy of us and other people last year, had a terrible year, zero sacks after a 5.5 sack rookie season, I believe it was. And he's had three quarterback hits in the last game. He has looked terrific rushing the passer. And I really think he's going to be a player that can help the Ravens. He's ahead of Tim Williams at rush linebacker now on the chart. And Williams had a sack last night. On Thursday night, a sack, a quarterback hit, one other play where he forced the quarterback out of the pressure for a short run. So exceptional game from Tim Williams. He was a guy who had not looked that good in the first week, but really came back to play well in the second.
All right. So again, positive notes on the linebackers. Now, here's where I'm concerned. We're going to move on to the secondaries. And I'm concerned because you know my favorite guy last year, Tavon Young. I was really excited for year two with Tavon Young, and he's now out.
Yeah.
So how's the secondary going to do?
Well, let's start with Tavon because there's no more hurtful injury than one, in my opinion, to a second-year player. It's a critical developmental year. It's a cheap year in terms of cap cost for the team. And when you lose a player at that point, you often also lose the ability to decide if you want to sign him after 3 years to a long-term deal. So Tavon had a good rookie year, so that may still not be a question for him. Losing him for the slot cornerback was just a huge loss. And the Ravens had no obvious person to step in and do it. So the thing they did is brought Lardarius Webb back up from safety to play slot, where he's been very successful over the years for the Ravens. And he's a good first option to do that. Maurice Kennedy, the day that Tavon went down, I was at camp that day, and Maurice Kennedy stepped in, had three interceptions, and now he's hurt as well. So another injury.
Yeah.
But guess what? The Ravens, with their UDFA process and their good scouting of other teams, players that were released, picked up two other players who are very good slot candidates. And number one is Jalen Hill, who's been the defensive MVP so far in the first two preseason games. He has been all over the field, played marvelously. It's not just a thing where he's getting lucky against bad quarterbacks. If you watch the guy, he tracks the ball. He stays with the receiver like nobody I have seen in a long time, like an early Webb. Now, he's not at that level, but he has ball skills of Starks. You know, he's an undersized guy, so I can see why he got overlooked in the draft. But he's a guy who has the ability to find the football in the air, and you can't put a value that's too high on that. I mean, he's an exceptional defender, and really, in my mind now, he's a lock to make the team. The question is he going to take over the starting slot corner role? And are they going to move Webb back to safety where he can help the team in the dime and do some other things that would be very exciting? The other side of that, the other player involved, is Trevin Wade. Now, he's a guy with more experience, a 50-year player. Anytime Pease acquires a 50-year player, I'm concerned because he's brought us a bunch of dogs in terms of Kyle Arrington in particular comes to mind, but that he's worked with before. But Trevin Wade, he looked great on the outside in the first game. They moved him into the slot. He had another great game in the second game. A guy who can play both slot and outside has exceptional value, and they flip-flopped Hill from the first to the second game to make Hill play all on the outside in game two. He looked great too, and I could not be more excited now about the Ravens' depth at corner. It has been many years since I've been as excited about the Ravens' depth at corner.
So we can calm down and stop wishing we still had Ed Reed? We'll be okay?
Yeah, I hope we'll be okay. Tony Jefferson, a very exciting player too. We don't even really haven't really talked to him about too much, but they're probably going to use him mostly on the back end this year, but the guy, when he gets up and covers a tight end, ain't nobody does it better. Nobody does it better.
All right, you used a little acronym there, UDFA. So by that, you mean the undrafted free agent pickups.
That's right.
All right. Just wanted to kind of clear that up for anyone who's like, what is the UDFA? Why have I never heard about the Ravens UDFA process?
Sure. Well, it's interesting that Billick talked about it a little bit the other night on TV, but he said that, first of all, the Ravens have a tremendous success at always having at least one UDFA make the roster. It's been something like 13 straight years they've had one. And last year, it was Michael Pierce, who is now one of the team's stars. You know, this year, it looks like there are three or four guys who might make the team. Jalen Hill, Ricky Ortiz are both good candidates. Adebojo is a good candidate wide receiver to make it. So they've got a handful of play, and Ricard also would be a fourth. So they have a number of candidates. I'm sure somebody will make it. I'm sure somebody will have a very significant thing. But the funny description was Billick talking about how Ozzie Newsome kind of hands out the money $1,000 at a time in terms of signing these guys, because you have a limited total UDFA budget. I don't recall exactly what it is, but there's a lot of negotiation apparently in terms of how they pass those bucks out.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we quickly went through the offensive defensive line, but it is preseason football. It is practice still. It's still getting ready. It really all comes down to week one, September 10th, and that's when we're going to start taking two episodes a week to break down the game. I want to get in a little format stuff for this season, because now we are different. We are now the Film Study Podcast, not Locked on Ravens. So we're not stuck in the same time constraints. So one new feature we're going to be adding is we want to interact more with listeners. So we want to take questions on Twitter that we can bring up to this. And I've got one question from Twitter for you already for episode one.
Great.
All right. And this comes from at Josh Sirocco on Twitter. And the question is, with all these injuries, do the Ravens need to focus on health? Are they doing something wrong and something different than all the other teams?
I think right now that is a worthy investigation to make, because when things go wrong for a long period of time in any organization, you try and figure out, what are you doing to cause this? And I would not directly make the link between the fact that the Ravens' last three first round picks all have hamstring injuries to anything that is a causality yet. But I would say that everything is on the table for looking at that. The process ought to be entirely inspected and reviewed to see what's going on. And I know that's something that the Steve Bisciotti would have a large interest in trying to figure out if things are going wrong from that perspective. Sometimes coaches can be a little bit more guarded about that because they really don't want their processes inspected. Coaches don't always want help from a lot of people, so you got to be careful about that. But Bisciotti has the power, obviously, to say, "Hey, look, John, we've got to look at this." And I think Ozzie Newsome would back him up on that, and to see if it's something in their strength regimen, or it's something in the way they practice, or maybe it's something in the way they warm up for practice that's having an impact on this.
Yeah, baseball had this problem, and people are speaking out, but it's more of they're saying, "Oh, well, it's because of how kids are coming up now and year round baseball and this and that," and they're not they're focusing so much that that's then hurting pitchers. But that's a baseball-wide problem. With the Ravens, you really see a lot more injuries in Baltimore than you do on other teams. And I don't believe it's just because we're in Baltimore.
I mean, if this is certainly, if in the actuarial world, we might call this a two-standard deviation negative result here. That they've had such a bad year for injuries, like nothing I've ever seen. You hopefully would not have one of these every 20 years.
Sure. All right, Ken. Well, again, this is our first episode. We'll be back next week. We're going to do one episode a week through the preseason, and then we'll do two episodes a week once the regular season gets here. Next week, why don't we also break into and get people ready for how you grade and how your grading process works?
That sounds great. We can go into that at length. Hopefully, if people are interested, they'll visit the website and see some of the writing that goes into a lot more detail. Allows you to look at the plays that I'm grading, and you kind of have the transparency to look at that yourself and decide if you agree. Josh, we also need to mention 336 here, and I kind of want you to tell them what you're doing on 336, because it's a great local, primarily baseball podcast that I enjoy listening to.
Yeah, well, right now we're doing a lot of yelling. A lot of because we're not sure where the Orioles are. And in 1 week, we think the Orioles are, all right, they're figuring this thing out and they're putting it together. And the next week, we're like, all right, let's prepare for next year. Right now, we're pretty positive. And even with the rough road trip, we're pretty positive that the Orioles are starting to put something together. They're at least looking better than they did for the month of June. We're excited. On Tuesday, we'll be talking about, since this weekend, the Orioles are celebrating 25 years at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. So on Tuesday, we will talk about some of our favorite memories. Or I guess it's Monday. Nah, this week it's Tuesday. I got it right. It's Tuesday.
So you get your stadium is today or tomorrow? Your little stadium?
Saturday is the giveaway for the stadium.
Okay, so Saturday, that's today. And if you're watching this on Facebook, you'll see we each have very representative things in the background. I see Josh has his Oriole giveaways, including some Camden Yard statues, bronze statues, and bobbleheads in the background.
Oh, this room is filled with Oriole giveaways.
Cool, as a cool studio you've got there. But and my office behind me, you can see my collection of football video through the years. So we all got our thing.
Yeah, a little different. You watch the Ravens. How many times do you watch a Ravens game?
About five times per week, I'd say. We watch the entire game through, of course, as it happens. We score certain things. We watch the defense twice through, once so I can score it, once so we can make notes for plays. And same thing then for the offensive line grading and for offensive. So five roughly is correct.
That's pretty amazing to go through a game five times. So
appreciate that.
All right, Ken. Well, again, everyone follow us on Twitter. Ken, on Twitter, your name?
At Film Study Ravens.
And I am at Josh Soroka. Go on, tell friends about the show, subscribe on iTunes, and check us out on Russell Street Report.
Yeah, great for your car. If you hate those long commutes and especially the commercials that are on radio, listen to us. We will have none or less of that.
And no callers with stupid ideas. I'll just ask the stupid questions.
Well, appreciate that, Josh. All thanks. Right.
Thank you, Ken.